is Monday, May the 8th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, France elects a pro-EU political novice as its new president.
This takes place after years of terrorist attacks, of high unemployment, social tension. It's a very impressive message that the French electorate has sent today.
Also ahead, the Israeli leader's reaction to a Palestinian policy paper, working out a new U.S. healthcare bill, plus the music festival season gets underway. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. The voters in France have spoken, and their new president will be centrist, pro-European Union candidate Emmanuel Macron, who started a new political movement only about a year ago. It is called En Marche, which roughly translates to moving forward. In Sunday's second round voting, Macron defeated far-right anti-EU candidate Marine Le Pen of the National Front Party. International Edition's Lori London caught up with Paris-based reporter Catherine Field, who has a read on the message voters are sending by electing Macron.
It says that France is ready to turn a page, that it's really had enough of the sort of complacency of doing the same thing all the time. Emmanuel Macron, don't forget, 13 months ago, set up a movement. It wasn't even a political party. So for the fact that someone so young with no political experience, this is the only elected office he's ever stood for, just shows that he managed to tap that nerve in the French people that wanted something different, wanted something new, and trusted him to do that.
Right. I mean, this is the youngest person ever elected president in France, 39 years old with no electoral experience.
It's extraordinary. Having said that, though, he has been the chief of staff for the president of France, current president, François Hollande, and he was a minister. You don't have to be an elected official to be a minister. So he's had a bit of experience, but certainly, the fact that he came from banking was initially thought as being something that would go against him, because particularly for the left and the hard left in France, the idea of a former investment banker really goes against the grain. They have a really nasty reputation in France. So the fact that he stepped away from that, and enough people believe that, well, you know, if he knows enough about the economy, he's been an investment banker, maybe, you know, give this guy a chance.
And what about France on the world stage as far as its policies going forward?
This man seems, on the face of it, to be very open. Just a very good example of this is when he arrived at his victory rally at the Louvre. They didn't play the Marseillaise. They sang the Ode to Joy, which is Beethoven's anthem that is used as the anthem of the European Union. It's a real opening to the outside world. He's always said that France's future lies as being part of the European Union. On a wider level, it's known that he will signal France's willingness to keep its troops in Mali and that he's still keen on keeping France as part of the coalition to try and defeat the so-called Islamic State in Syria and Iraq. So the fact that he's said that he believes this shows that there's really not going to be that much change. France is still going to be a very open country. It's going to take its seat as per usual in the UN Security Council. It's a permanent member. This is something that's going to continue to take seriously.
Do you think this is also a sign that maybe the wave of nationalism that has been spreading throughout the world that led to Donald Trump's election and to Brexit could be losing steam to some degree?
In Europe, it has been losing steam. Let's not forget that Emmanuel Macron's election as French president is the third one in a row. We first of all had the Austrian presidential elections, and everyone said, wow, be careful here. There's a chance that a nationalist populist will take over. It didn't happen. Same in the Netherlands, and now here. I think there's now enough out there for people to understand that there is another way, that if you give your trust to someone who's not just going to come up with quick results, who's going to say that the answer is to pull up the drawbridge and retrench into yourself, which is what the opposition National Front was offering in France, then that actually can happen. Emmanuel Macron's message all through the campaign was France could be open, the world could be open, and there's no reason for people not to feel at ease in an open, globalized world.
Paris-based reporter Catherine Field, she was speaking with my colleague Lori London. Benjamin Haddad is the U.S.-based representative of Emmanuel Macron's party En Marche. VOA's Victor Beatty tackled him, or tracked him down, that is, in Paris, to talk about the win.
This takes place after years of terrorist attacks, of high unemployment, social pension. It's a very impressive message that the French electorate has sent today.
I want to talk to you about some of the challenges that he faces, but first of all, what do you make of the low election turnout?
I would say it's low. I think, you know, it's lower than it's been before. I think it's linked to the fact that a lot of people had supported other parties in the first round and were maybe lacking enthusiasm in the second round. But at the same time, you still have more than 70% of the French electorate that has decided to give a strong majority to Mr. Macron.
Marine Le Pen seemed gracious in defeat. She picked up about 35%. Was that about what was expected, or did she poll higher?
No, she pulled lower. She underperformed her polls. I think she hoped and expected to do much better at this presidential election. The truth is, she has run a fairly bad campaign. I think she has showed in her campaign that was very aggressive, that all the work that she's done in the last 10 years to make the party more respectable, to sort of get it rid of the most nativist, racist, or anti-Semitic elements, all of this resurfaced during the campaign, during a couple of speeches she made about World War II, in her behavior that was very tense, very confrontational, and extremely low on substance in the debate against Mr. Macron a few days ago. I think her attempt to appeal to the mainstream has completely failed in this campaign. Now, you know, it is important not to be complacent because she still gets a third of the electorate, which is a record for the National Front at this stage. But, you know, I think if we had been told 6 months ago that she would end up second in the first round, it went 35% in the second round, that would have been seen as a real failure for her.
Mr. Macron, of course, already looking to the future. He says he needs a majority in the legislature to carry out reforms. Will he get that with a new party?
I mean, look, you know, the very fact that he's accomplished what he's accomplished today with a new party gives reasons for him to be optimistic about next month. I think what this election has shown, both for Mr. Macron and Madame Le Pen in the second round, is that the French want new faces. They want change. The two parties that have governed France for the last 40 years, the Republicans and the Socialists on the right and left, have completely collapsed in this election. The Republicans are right third, the Socialists are right fifth, incumbent Socialists. So clearly, you know, we are in a time of transition in French politics, where people are expecting something new and don't trust the two parties that have failed to reform the French economy in the last decade. So I think there's it's going to be a challenge with, you know, in just a month with a lot of new candidates, a lot of newcomers, but I also think that's what the electorate is yearning for.
Mr. Macron, of course, faces a number of challenges, reform within France and also within the European Union, the Islamic threat of terrorism. How is he going to meet these challenges, being a political novice?
There are a lot of challenges, and you know, I would point to three. The first one is obviously reforming the job market. The job market is today extremely rigid, and is the main cause for the high unemployment, especially for the youth and for people coming from immigrant backgrounds. I would say the second one, as you said, is clearly fighting radical Islamist terrorism that has plagued the country for the last few years, and that has been one of the issues of the campaign. And the third one would be reforming Europe. And I think on this, clearly, he will need a strong majority. He will need to govern with competent people from both the left and the right. But I think one of the key messages will be to rally Europeans around these causes. You know, Mr. Macron has said repeatedly there's no national, you know, sheltered answer to terrorism, for that matter, that we need at the European level to improve cooperation, to improve intelligence sharing, border control. All these things need to take place at a European level because they're European challenges. So I think clearly that's going to be one of the main axes for Mr. Macron in the coming months.
Benjamin Haddad is the U.S.-based representative of French President-elect Emmanuel Macron's party En Marche. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impulga, host of Reporters Roundtable. This week on Reporters Roundtable, the quality of elections in Africa. Join me with a panel of journalists and analysts on Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
The news never stops, So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. In Nigeria, Boko Haram militants have released 82 schoolgirls they had kidnapped back in 2014. Bucky Shonabare is one of the founders of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign.
This is a very, very exciting news for us. That we have over 80 of our girls coming back again means over 80 girls no longer in the den of the abductors. And this is an exciting news for us, for the parents, for the Chibok community, for their relatives, for their friends, and for their family. So, yes, it's a very exciting and welcome development for us.
The 276 schoolgirls kidnapped in 2014 are among thousands of people abducted by Boko Haram over the years. Also in the news, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has symbolically tossed into a wastebasket a publicized Hamas position paper, which details an apparent softening of its stance toward Israel. Mr. Netanyahu addresses that position paper here in an excerpt from a produced video.
The new Hamas document says that Israel has no right to exist. It says every inch of our land belongs to the Palestinians. It says there is no acceptable solution other than to remove Israel. So why does Hamas say there's a consensus for a smaller Palestinian state now? In order to destroy Israel later. They want to use their state to destroy our state. Is moving from calling for genocide of all Jews to calling just for the annihilation of Israel, is that progress or moderation? Only if you have no standards whatsoever.
We asked Randolph-Macon College Middle East scholar Michael Fischbach for his read on all of this.
The Prime Minister's reaction notwithstanding, it is a fairly remarkable change on the part of the Hamas movement, and one that actually reflects decades-long Palestinian policy, regardless of what one thinks about that policy. But that is a policy of moving from more expansive statements about what the ultimate goal should be for the Palestinian national movement into slowly recognizing the idea of creating a Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza. And for whatever else one says about Hamas, given all the wars that's gone on recently between Israel and Hamas, given the ongoing tension between Hamas and the Fatah-dominated Palestinian Authority, it does represent a fairly breathtaking change in that movement's historical attitude toward Israel and toward a final solution to the conflict.
And then we asked, is that enough?
Well, it's not enough for the Israelis, but traditionally Israel's had a rather odd diplomatic demand of the Palestinians, which was not only to recognize Israel, but to recognize Israel's right to exist. Now, typically when countries recognize each other, they exchange ambassadors, they shake hands, and no one says, well, we recognize your right to exist, for instance, as a communist state, such as when the United States under President Carter recognized China in the late 1970s. They simply said, we recognize you. Israel has always demanded of the Palestinians not only to recognize Israel, which the PLO did back in 1993, but also to recognize its right to exist. And in recent years, we've heard them say, recognize Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state. So from the point of view of Israel, I can understand that much like its policy toward the PLO decades ago, essentially no matter what Hamas says, Israel's not going to deal with it. And whether it's because of this or because of that is really missing the point. In this modern age of wars on terrorism, the Israelis understand that they can basically ignore Hamas and treat it simply as a security problem.
Dr. Fischbach went on to say because the status quo, particularly for the Palestinians in Gaza, is terrible, and that in the absence of some sort of forward movement with the peace process, he cannot imagine anything happening except some sort of return to violence.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
U.S. Senate is beginning to work on an issue that shifted control of Congress in 2010 and could do so again next year, America's costly and complex health care system. Last week, the House of Representatives passed a Republican bill repealing former President Obama's health care law, but the Republican celebration may be short-lived, as VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman explains to my colleague Jim Stevenson.
Jim, at the end of last week, my colleague who covers the House of Representatives, Catherine Gibson, had a few choice words for me. Healthcare is all yours now. And that's because the Republican-led House of Representatives, at long last, after years of promising, actually passed a healthcare reform bill to repeal Obamacare and replace it with a Republican version of healthcare reform that tries to save money and tries to eliminate sort of the government mandate as far as everyone needing to have insurance, and ends some of the federal government-assisted program for those who are very poor. It doesn't end the program, but it limits the extent to which people can access that. It was quite an achievement. All the House Republican leaders went over to the White House for a victory lap with President Trump. But then the Senate Republican leadership came out and said, well, we're going to do our own bill. So that's where things stand. We don't know quite what's going to be coming down the pike in the coming weeks and months. But it is now very much front and center at the U.S. Senate.
I can't remember a time when there was so much celebration over half a victory, where a bill has halfway passed, essentially, and everybody goes to the Rose Garden and says, wow, this is great, because the Senate has indicated that their bill is going to be quite different.
For all of Obamacare's flaws, and I think even former President Obama would admit that there are things about the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, that could be improved, where it's not a perfect law, there are some very popular provisions. If you have kids up to the age of 26, they can remain on your health care plan. Those with pre-existing conditions, in other words, if you have a heart condition that you've been living with for years and years, health insurance companies cannot discriminate against you and charge you a higher premium for that pre-existing condition. These are some very popular provisions within Obamacare. And what Republicans have been wrestling with is trying to preserve those elements that the public genuinely likes while also remaining true to their political base, which believes that Obamacare is a massive overreach of the federal government into America's lives and into America's wallets. What the House Republicans did was to say pre-existing conditions are still covered, but we're not going to fund it very much. There's going to be a limit on the extent to which it's funded, and states can opt out. States have a say in how this plays out. What Senate Republicans seem to be looking at is to try to put back some of the guarantees. But they're going to run into a problem, because in doing so, they are going to be reconstructing elements of a law that the Republican Party hates and has been promising to do away with ever since 2010, when it became law.
Watching everything from his perch in the Senate, VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, and good health, Jim.
Yeah, absolutely. Good health to everyone. Thank you, gentlemen. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A group of scientists using NASA's Airborne Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, or SOFIA, recently completed a study that confirmed their previous findings about a young and nearby planetary system. The researchers found that the system surrounding the star Epsilon Eridani has an architecture that resembles our own solar system. Our solar system has the asteroid belt and the Kuiper belt, two circumstellar disks filled with various debris such as asteroids, comets, and other objects. The research team found and then confirmed that the Epsilon Eridani system also has two debris disks circling in similar positions and distances as those in our own planetary system. The researchers also found evidence that a planet with about the same mass as Jupiter circles its star at a distance similar of our giant planet to the Sun. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Very good to have you with us today. You know, when spring comes, there are certainly always those showers and lots of blossoms, especially for people with hay fever. We know they're blossoms. But also, we have something quite pleasant. They are music festivals. And as I mentioned on the Friday program, rapper Jay-Z will be heading to the Made in America Festival in Philadelphia later this month. Getting the season started, however, as it always does, is the New Orleans Jazz Festival.
Two, three, four. Come on, everybody. Come on and get on your feet. Do you remember? Changing the mind and pretend that while chasing the cloud away.
That's right, it's Earth, Wind, and Fire back at the New Orleans Jazz Festival, but this year without its founder, Maurice Mo White. He died last year at his Los Angeles home, and White was often known to say that September was his favorite song.
Holding hands with your heart.
Jazz and Heritage Festival, often known as just simply Jazz Fest, is an annual celebration of the music and culture of New Orleans, but it's becoming increasingly a venue for all musical genres.
Songwriter Dave Matthews and guitarist Tim Reynolds often collaborate, and New Orleans is one of their favorite venues.
Crash Into Me is always on their playlist.
But it's a sweet song. It's a sweet song. I hope.
Your chain tied to me, tie me up again. Who's got the claws in you, my friend? Into your heart beat again. Sweet like candy to my soul. Sweet you rock and sweet you roll. Lost for you, I'm so lost for you. How I when you come crash into me, and I come into you.
Another mainstay at the New Orleans Jazz Festival is the ever-so-popular Stevie Wonder. This year, singing a song he released back in 1976, dedicated to his daughter, Aisha. Isn't she lovely? Get a lot better than Stevie Wonder, do you think? Nah, no way. Hey, listen, everyone, thanks for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Latest world news is straight ahead. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Chaz Hall, I'm Steve Norman. We're all in Washington, hoping you have a great Monday. Now more of good old Stevie Wonder.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a joint local declaration issued on April 25th, the European Union, the Embassy of the Federal Republic of Germany, the Embassy of France, the Embassy of the United States of America, and the Representative Office of Switzerland expressed concern over the recent arrests of civil society activists in Chad. We are concerned by the detention of several civil society activists, by the lack of information concerning the charges against them, as well as the conditions of their detention, and wish to reiterate our support for the respect for fundamental liberties, among them the freedom of expression and right to demonstrate, essential elements of democracy, the signatories declared. Members of civil society should play a central role in reinforcing democracy and the rule of law. The declaration also responded to reports that, on the night of April 11th, a convoy of two vehicles containing between 86 and 100 prisoners was attacked by heavily armed gunmen, resulting in the death of 9 prisoners. Among the dead were 8 individuals implicated in the death of President Idriss Deby's nephew in January. The signatories noted that the attack against the prisoner convoy and the assassination of prisoners during their transfer are also a source for concern. Believing in the right to a fair trial, which permits the prevention of impunity and protection against abuses, we hope that these acts are clarified so that those responsible can be brought to justice. The Prosecutor General and members of civil society have also condemned the attack. The United States and the other signatories to the local declaration encourage Chad to ensure respect of the rights enshrined in its constitution and by the international agreements to which it is a signatory, which contribute to peace and stability.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.